Good afternoon, Freedomizers. Thank you for joining us here. This three-hour time block features the Sabbath Hour with Brother Gregory, and after that, Team Free State. So I hope that you will pull up a chair and pull up the chat room, come by and visit us. Our call-in number is 347-324-3704 if you'd like to call in and ask questions or make comments. We'll be right with you.
Welcome to Sabbath Hour. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about a number of things. You already heard Cheryl giving you the call-in number, and we'll give that again in a little bit. I have a number of topics. We talked about them this morning, banking, money, concepts. We thought that would be appropriate, although we were going to have a special guest. We'll probably talk about banking a little bit more next week on our regular show on Liberty Radio Live in the morning and our blog talk before that. But one of the reasons why it was appropriate to talk about it today is because on this day in history in 1862, the first paper money was issued in the U.S., which included $5, $10, and $20 bills. Actually, a little bit later in 1962, same year, the first $1 bill was issued as a legal tender, and it was a United States note, and the portrait on it was Salmon B. Chase, Secretary of Treasury. There had been a great deal of conflict up until that time about having a U.S. bank and not having a U.S. bank and having chartered banks and not having chartered banks. It was because there was a great deal of worry about the money powers gaining control over the government. And in the early days of America, the government had almost no control over the people, very limited control. Obviously, you had to be a law-abiding citizen, but there wasn't nearly the taxation that we have today. There wasn't anything like the regulations we have today. There wasn't even a required public school, none of that even existed. They were too close to the freedom that they had earned between 1600 and 1776. And even after 1776, they did not. I've heard people say they fought for the Constitution. The Constitution didn't exist for quite a few years after that. And there's a whole history behind that. But paper money had been around for a long time. It had been issued both by governments and by banks and corporations. It is basically the paper money consisted of a note where you said that this note was worth something of value, $1, which is an ounce of silver, or a dollar of gold, which would be an ounce of gold, or a gold piece that's worth, it says it's worth 20 ounces. That was one of the big mistakes the United States made. Maybe it wasn't a mistake, but it was a mistake that we allowed them to do it, or it became so pervasive in the doing of it. And it's when government starts becoming more and more important and individual responsibility less and less. But they fixed the price of silver and gold in relationship to each other, saying that 20 ounces of silver is worth an ounce of gold. And as soon as the government has that kind of power, markets can be manipulated. So let's go back and ask, what is money? money is not necessarily paper notes. It's not necessarily gold and silver. It's whatever you use as a medium of exchange. It is usually good, if you want to have a free nation, to have the medium of exchange actually have value. That doesn't mean that the value is based on somebody's promise. It means that the object itself has value. In other words, it's commodity money. It has a commodity value. Whether you use it as money or not, it still has value. Another big mistake that we allow governments to make is that they get to coin money so that you have a coin of the realm. In America, there wasn't a lot of coinage going on, and we went over a lot of that history earlier today, but that was a two-hour show, so we don't need to go into all that right now. But the point is that they used all kinds of coin. The first coins were made by private enterprise, not by governments. If you were a silver miner, you produce silver bullion. And when you went to trade that out for whatever you needed, you would melt it down and put it into convenient ingot sizes or whatever. Well, one of the sizes that they put it in was the size of a dollar, an ounce of silver. And being good silver miners and silversmiths, they began to make that silver in a very exact amount with a very specific purity. And that made your dollar worth more. And it was called the dollar because there was a silversmith by the name of Thaler who was making these and making them very exact, very pure, and they began to be used as money. That's really the way that you should produce money in a free society, is whatever it is, whatever commodity. They used whiskey a lot as a commodity money if you were west of the Appalachians, because even though they grew a great deal of grain and put up that grain to be sold, to haul that grain over the Appalachians was very expensive, very bulky, but if you reduce the grain down to whiskey, you could haul a lot more value in a smaller space with a lot less weight. And so people who didn't even drink at all would buy whiskey knowing that it would probably improve as it aged, and therefore the value would simply go up, and that was a good thing. And so there were other kinds of commodities that we used trade goods for instead of coin. But, of course, coin has a certain value as a commodity money that you don't have in other things, that because of the fact that, you know, if your house burns down, your gold is still there. It's just not maybe a coin anymore, but it's still there, the same amount of weight, same amount of gold. And so, therefore, it was very easily preserved. But Jesus talks about your money in your treasury being rusted away and eaten out like moths eat it out. Well, of course, he's talking about the bureaucracy, because when Jesus preached the kingdom, he talked about a treasury. He actually even talked in the treasury of the government in the gastrophone and explained to the ministers how they were to operate. Because he was the king, only the king could fire the money changers, which is what he was doing with the string whip. And he wasn't tipping the tables over. He was saying, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, and you're fired. And that was an important time to fire them, because normally they would be elected by the people. They hadn't been for a while. They'd been being appointed. But now he was going to have them elected by the people. And the best time to do that was Pentecost, because all the different people, tribes, got together, and the congregations got together, and they picked a minister, and that minister picked a minister, and that minister picked a minister, and eventually you got up to what they would call the porters of the temple. We put it down in the Greek as the money changers, and of course they were called money changers because when you paid your taxes to the temple, you had to pay in the coin of the realm. And if you had a Roman denarii, you had to have it changed over to the mites and denaries of Israel. That's the coin that they wanted, because that's what you paid your taxes in, which we now have gone full circle, and now you know why governments coin money and create coin of the realm. It's so they can tax you. Well, this is all well and good for most forms of government, but in the government of God, in the pure government of God that's practicing what you would call pure religion, which is actually a form of socialism without the gun. You know, socialism is charity with a gun. It's time to contribute. But pure religion is charity without the gun. It's time to contribute, but it's your choice. And this is what Christ clearly explained, that you go to the person who owes the money for the support of the government, each person who's a part of that government, and you say, it's time to contribute to the government. And he says, well, I can't pay what I thought I was going to be able to pay because I've had some setbacks, so I can only pay this much. Okay, pay in full. And that's how you pay your taxes in the kingdom. And all the other governments don't have it. You're under arrest. We'll take your house. We'll take your sons. We'll take you, put you in jail. We'll do all kinds of nasty, nasty things to you. Because they're not governments of the perfect law of liberty. They're governments of force, fear, and violence. They force you to march in a straight line, to bend over when they say bend over, and work when they say work, and stand up when they say stand up. And that's the way they operate their governments. But the government of God, it doesn't work that way. Of course, the government of God would only work with virtuous people, people who actually cared about each other, people who would actually take care of each other. So you don't need to coin money in the kingdom. You might have coins, but you can use any coins because you determine what you pay in taxes. Now, most people will imagine that, oh, you couldn't have a government like that. Well, of course, they did have a government like that for hundreds of years. The early Christian government was that way, and it was called by historians a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire because that's what it was. It was literally a government. This is why they say right in the Bible, these are the men that do contrary to the decrees of Caesar because they say there is another king. Why? Because they're the government. Jesus says, I appoint unto you a kingdom. I appoint unto you a government. It's just not to be like those governments of the Gentiles where the princes call themselves benefactors, the rulers, the presidents, the prime ministers call themselves benefactors, but they exercise authority one over another. Why? Because that kind of system makes the word of God to none effect. That kind of system is not dependent upon faith, hope, and charity. So once you start getting a coin of the realm, they can start taxing you, and then they can measure that you paid enough. If you didn't pay enough, they can beat you. And they can't just do that. You have to volunteer into the system somehow, or you could be conquered, but then you're just a conquered slave, and a conquered slave can leave the first chance he gets. But if you're conquered by your own greed, you can't throw off that government and establish for you another government, because it isn't just that you were captured or that you lived in an area or whatever. You're actually in debt to that government because you have taken benefits. I mean, everybody wants to get out of the system. Are you ready to pay back all the money that you spent, or they spent on you, for your public school education? Now, I will admit, your public school education isn't worth a brass farthing, but they spent money on you to give you that education. It is you are now in debt. That is what they call tutor in the time of the Romans. The Romans had a clever scheme. Originally, they had about 300, 400 years of a fairly pure republic. It began to disintegrate in about the 300 year, or you could even go back to the 200 year, but it really, really got going around the 300 or 400 year. But it was over by Caesar. It was virtually dead by the time of Caesar Augustus, the republic. They had a different kind of republic. They still called it a republic, but it really wasn't a republic. It was an indirect democracy for a while, and then it was a totally imperial power. But the, how do you get the people all enfranchised? Well, they enfranchised a great many people who came into the country, the your tired, your huddled masses that came in to do work for the Romans because the Romans had all this money and people wanted, I'll go work for a Roman. They sold themselves slaves. They became employees. Some of them came as merchants and did work as freemen because they were artisans and could produce goods that would make them a good living because the Romans had all this money and they wanted stuff and you could make stuff so you could make a living. But all these people were not Romans. They were a different kind of citizen. And they could be taxed. They were the strangers in the midst of the Romans. And they could be taxed, and they often were, depending on what they were doing. They required that they pay in. But they began to give these people some sort of citizenship, a legal citizenship status called quiris. And that status eventually allowed them to have a proletariat kind of vote in the scheme of things, the representation. And they made laws protecting these people. And that wasn't really Roman citizenship, but that was a citizenship in Rome. The original Romans were what they call Romeos. They were in full possession of their rights. It was a pure republic. They couldn't be drafted. They couldn't be regulated. And they were fairly free. It wasn't until, maybe a little bit into Pompey, but really into the time of Caesar that they began to become more and more controlled. How did they get the people, the actual Roman citizen, from the point of being an absolutely free individual in possession of their rights back into slavery? Well, one way was this banking system and the monies that they produced. But right up until the time of Jesus Christ, they were still using silver coin. It wasn't until Nero that they took the silver out of the Roman silver coin. So there still was some way that they began to enfranchise even the actual Roman citizen and began to reduce his status down to that of those quiris citizens, those not native-born citizens, and often even slaves within the Roman proper. And the way they did it, there was three ways. One, first thing they required was birth registration. You had to register the birth of your child if you wanted the benefits of the Roman government. Now, there wasn't a lot of benefits of the Roman government. You had a benefit of law, but that wasn't the benefit. They're talking about some of the health care, some of the social welfare, some of the protections that were not natural protections but extra protections. You would want to register your child so that when he was of age and he put on the toga, he would be eligible for the benefits. For instance, if you were to be killed, the government offered to take care of your children and raise them up and educate them. And so you had to register the birth so they'd know when the child was of age. And it wasn't mandatory, but it was an option. The second thing that you had to do was take this tutor. You had to take these benefits. And much of the time it had to do with education, the education of your children. They didn't educate all the children. We're talking about enfranchising a once-free society into this subject citizenship. And so this second thing was called tutor. And the last thing that you had to do was you had to sacrifice, when you became of age, when you reached your age of maturity, which is 17, 18 years old in those days, you could actually sign up for the military at 17, and it was normally about a 20-year signing up if you signed up for the military. And if you weren't a Roman citizen, you could sign up for the military and get Roman citizenship by doing so. But anyway, when you were of age, you had to sacrifice on one of the altars at one of the temples of Rome. Now, one of the things you have to realize, and most people are completely oblivious to this, is that the temples of Rome were just government buildings. All those pagan temples you hear about and you read about back in those days, those are just government buildings. almost all of them were built by the government of Rome. They did accept donations, and like when they were building one temple there in Rome proper itself, they announced they were having their groundbreaking ceremony, just like we do today. People actually came and threw pieces of gold into the dirt where they were going to start laying the stone foundations. And they covered those coins, not coins, but actually raw nuggets of gold into there. And it was a way, kind of a superstitious way, but it was a way in which to show their support. Now, they gave other funds because they would put up, you know, the philanthropic sort of citizenry, because a lot of them were very rich, would put money into building these temples. Caesar Augustus was fabulously wealthy. At one time, almost half of the Roman population was getting a large portion of their welfare directly paid out of the pocket of Caesar Augustus. And of course, he could do this because he just defeated some of the richest men in Rome and confiscated all their property, so he had plenty to give away. But and of course, we're going to see that in the United States here not too long, where they already have confiscation laws all over the books, where if you get caught, there was an 80-year-old woman who had a little, she had a big estate. She had a little house, a little cottage on the estate that she let her grandson live in. Well, her grandson was dealing in drugs, just marijuana and stuff as far as I know. I don't remember there was any hard drugs, but still he was dealing in drugs. He was dealing, and he was caught, and the government seized her entire estate. Now, she wasn't taking the drugs. She wasn't dealing in drugs. She didn't know her grandson was dealing in the drugs. But the confiscation laws say that, you know, dealing in drugs on that estate, confiscate the property. And he, and the grandmother was literally evicted by federal marshals. And they took multi-million dollar estate. You get found with too much cash on you, confiscate it. You don't get it back. They take it away. They already have confiscation laws for and had them for years, that if you don't pay all your taxes on your property, they confiscate it away. I know of a lady who was a widow lady in Idaho. Her husband had been sick for years. She had a bunch of kids. They were all home-taught, and her husband got ill with, I believe it was a cancer. It's been a long time now. And there were a number of people in Idaho that eventually got wind of this. They were trying to help her out. But she, when her husband died, she couldn't get enough money together to feed the kids and pay the taxes. And so the property went for taxes. She didn't owe that much on it, but it was a couple of years she owed. The property was worth hundreds of thousands of dollars because it was on lake ground. And it was, you know, a fairly pristine area, and it was quite a few acres. They didn't have any more money. Her husband hadn't been making any while he was sick, and she was just absolutely worn thin. And when she was out trying to get jobs and work, they came and they rounded up all the kids, and they sold her property at auction, and nobody could stop it. Now, if that isn't robbing widows and orphans, I read the quote this morning in the Bible where it talks about your nation, if you rob widows and orphans, and it's in Exodus 22, let's see, one of these verses down here, he says in 23, if thou afflict them in, oh, he says, ye, no, let's go to 22, so this is 22:22. Easy to remember. Ye shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. And that's what this woman was, a widow, and all of her children were fatherless because the father had passed away. And it says, if thou afflict them in any wise, and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword. and your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. And that's what we do. We do this in this country all the time. The news media got a hold of this, everything, and they let the sale go through. The people of that community, they were all going to their churches and singing. They were all going to their churches and saying, yeah, we believe in God. You know, this goes for the Jews, too, because that's Old Testament. And they were letting this woman be absolutely robbed. And she was trying to get by without going on food stamps. She was trying to get by without taking welfare. She could have probably taken welfare and food stamps and Social Security and paid those taxes. But she didn't want to take that because that's not the way of Christ. And she lost everything. Now, you can say she was foolish, but she didn't rob anybody. But the people of Idaho robbed her. And she was a widow. And they robbed all their orphans, all the kids, because the property was worth a lot of money. And they sold it at county auction for $40,000 cash. She didn't get any of that. None of that. Even though she didn't owe but a few thousand dollars in taxes. I think it was $8,000 in taxes. So that's what goes on. And that goes on every day, all over America, that kind of stuff. I mean, you got inheritance tax. All that goes on. But that's not really what the topic was. But what we were talking about is usury this morning in banking. And I'll tell you a little thing about usury. And we see a usury popping up in Exodus 22:25. It says, if thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as a usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. So let's talk about anybody who's poor. So I guess you can charge rich people usury, but you can't charge poor people usury. And the reality is, what is usury? Usury is paying for the use of something. Well, you should be able to rent some. Is that usury? Well, no, but I'll tell you this real quick, because we're going to run out of time in this first half of the show, and maybe you can think of some phone calls that you want to make. But if you have to pay a use tax on anything, that's usury. That use tax is a tax on the use of something, and that's an interest charged on the use of something that you have been given. It's not just like renting something, but it's usury. And that's really the same word usury is involved in the Old Testament in the word tribute. And the fact is that all property tax today on your car, that's property tax, on your land, on your business, even on your labor now, because income tax is a use tax as well. It's you have to pay a tax on the use of your own labor because you waived a right to your labor when you joined the Corbin system of Social Security. That's why you owe income tax, because wages and salaries aren't income. But they become income if you waive a right to your labor, and that's in the Social Security Act. That's what you're doing when you go get that number. You become an employee of the federal government. That's why they call that number a federal employee identification number. So all those taxes are use taxes, and we charge people those use taxes so that we can have benefits. So if you start thinking about these things and start understanding how it all works, we're in a lot of trouble. Because it says in the Bible that if you rob any of these widows and orphans, God says, I will kill you with a sword. So we are going to be under the sword in this country. We are a wicked people. Not only that, we cast out the unborn children by the thousands. We rob each other. We are covetous of each other so that we can have lots and lots of benefits. It's not really robbery, but it is covetousness, and through covetousness you have been made merchandise. So I don't know if I've stirred anybody's imagination. If you've got any questions, you can put them in the chat room. If you want to call in to the program after the break, the telephone number is, and you write this down so you have it all ready to call us up and give me heck after the break, 347 324-3704. And I'll turn it over to Cheryl so she can bring us into a commercial break.
Okay, that's good. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You're listening to the Sabbath Hour with Brother Gregory, and that's here on Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com. So if you'd like to join us any Saturday between 3 and 6 here on this time frame, please come by and join us in the live chat room.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Hey, Brother Gregory, it's all yours.
Okay, we're back. Yeah, if any questions show up in the chat room, you let me know because I can't watch it from here.
Oh, you bet I will.
And then I guess if anybody wants to call in that number, go ahead and call it in. One of the things that we were pointing out in the first part of the show is this idea of tutor, this benefits. The greatest destroyers of freedom are the givers of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. That's a well-known proverb or axiom of law that has come down to us through the ages. And this is how they really make slaves of men, and this is why Nimrod, who was called a mighty hunter in before the Lord, but actually what that would best be translated is a mighty provider instead of the Lord. The word's never translated hunter anywhere else in the Bible, and it has to do with victuals or provisions, and that's what he was, is a mighty provider instead of the Lord. You went to Nimrod, and he had plenty of stuff to give away and help you with your Corbin, your social welfare system, but you had to pay into Nimrod. And he appointed men to exercise authority over you and to force your contributions according to what he or some sort of group thought was the right amount. Now, how do they get the power to do that? You have to sign up. You have to become a part of the collective. You have to have one purse. You have to agree somewhere along the line in order for that to truly be lawful. And if you take the benefit, it is assumed, and rightly so, that you've agreed. Because if you've taken a benefit, you either stole it or you agreed to the terms. And it's assumed that you've agreed to the terms. And so as soon as you go, your parents turned you over to go to public school, they turned you over to the tutor. As soon as you got the numbers and began to sacrifice upon their altars, in other words, paid in at their public coffers, you were assumed to be one of their children. And if you read the book booklet, Call No Man Father, we go into this and explain how that's done and how it was the way in which people were brought into subjection. In that same Exodus part where we had just read about, you know, robbing the widows and orphans and how this would be, you know, the doom of you, it goes on to say, if thou lend money to any of my people that are poor on usury, that also is a bad thing. If thou at all take thy neighbor's raiment as a pledge, which is what happens, all our houses are as a pledge. If we don't pay in, they take our houses. They don't just take our raiment, our covering. They take our house. And they'll take anything. That if you don't pay in the amount, the use tax, the right to use it. One of the subjects we go into, and we have audios up on hisholychurch.org on this, law versus legal. Legal title does not include the right to use a thing. You can pay $400,000 for a giant estate or $1 million for a giant estate. You don't have a right to use it. Legal title doesn't include the right to use it. You have to pay the use tax to use it. Who's the true owner of the property you just bought? It's the state. Now, that's not what Americans came here to do. They came here to actually own land, but you've forgotten all about that. After 100 years of public school, you wouldn't even know that. And you can't just go back to that because you say, we want our inalienable rights back. We can't throw off the government because it's not the government because we created it. It's the government because we've been eating at the trough. We've been accepting the benefits, and we have gone in. This is a debt system, so we have created this debt, and you have to pay it all back if you want out. Or there are a few other ways out, but we won't go into those. We'll keep you in suspense on those. But where are you going to stand when you get out? Because they got all the land just about. Well, there's a way around that too, but it's not an easy road. There is a burden to it, and there is a task, and this is what the gospel of Christ was all about. This is what the gospel of Moses was all about. This is what the gospel of Abraham was all about. The good news of Abraham was all about. He was showing people how they could be free. If we read one more verse in that Exodus, it says, "Thou shalt not revile the gods, nor curse the rulers of thy people." Now, why do they put gods and rulers in the same place? And why are they saying this? Because gods is simply the ruling judges. Now, Jesus also says something similar to this, but if you go back to the Old Testament, when people went back into the bondage of Egypt, sold their labor so that now the government had a right to 10, 20, 30% of your labor, they could take it away, they could compel your service, which is called tribute. It says, "The slothful shall be under tribute." When they do that, God said, "Go and cry unto the gods which you have chosen for yourself, because I will not hear you in that day." And when they were doing this with Saul, it said they are doing this because they would not have me rule over you. Well, how does God rule over you? He rules in the hearts of the people. God's government is a system that operates on the perfect law of liberty, where the government is entirely supported by charity. Your social welfare is dependent upon the pure and good hearts of the people. Well, obviously, you're not going to find that in the United States today. You're not going to find it in Australia. You're not going to find it in any country today, because most of the people are corrupt. They will not take care of the needy. They are not the good Samaritans of the world. But there are a rare group of people that want to be as virtuous as Christ, want to seek the righteousness of God, and they want to live together in harmony and peace and take care of their neighbor because they actually love their neighbor as themselves. And those people are the real Christians, and they don't know they're the real Christians all the time. They look out there at the people claiming to be Christians, and they say, "I'm not one of those sanctimonious hypocrites. I'm not one of those, so I can't be a Christian." Well, no, you probably are a Christian if you have that character of Christ. Now, I'm not talking about the charity that weakens people. I'm talking about the charity that strengthens people. In that system, ye are gods. Now, that's what Jesus says. Is it not written that ye also are gods, ruling judges? You are a ruling judge of your own actions. You're a ruling judge of how much you will support your government, which ministers you will pay, and which people who need help and assistance you will help and assist, and how much you will assist. You are the ruling judge of that in a free society. So in that sense, you're a god over your own choices. And hopefully, if those choices are in accordance with the righteousness of God, you will have a free and strong nation. But most people won't want to be a part of that. All the other people that are not a part of that government were considered strangers. Now, we didn't oppress those strangers in our midst, and that's one of the things you have to realize, that when Israel was at its height, there were all kinds of people living there that were not a part of their government. But they said, "Well, these guys, it's working. These guys are successful. These guys are healthier. These guys are without disease. These guys are strong. These guys are to be feared. But yet they are righteous. So I would rather be a servant to Israel than a free man in Egypt." And many people made that choice. But, you know, today in America, there is no virtue. There is no virtue. We have this thing, this phenomenon that's sweeping the nation, the Kony 2012. Some video that was made by a videographer who evidently gets about $90,000 a year for making this video and other videos, and going around and promoting this, the invisible children, they call it. From what I've heard, and I haven't verified all this, that Invisible Children's Charity gets about $13 million a year. And that's how they can pay a videographer to produce a video, $90,000. And yes, there are children in that Uganda country that are have been abused over the last 20 years by this Kony, who was a militant who formed a little army, and he would go around and literally grab children in villages and force them into his army and abuse the women and the girls and mutilate boys who didn't cooperate. And so now they want to get rid of them, so they got this. It's by April you're going to see a lot more of this, and the idea is they want to get Kony by the end of the year. The problem is that Kony's probably been dead for 5 years. They know he and his forces aren't even in Uganda anymore. But they're trying to get soldiers from America to go over there, and they already have some there, advising the soldiers of the government in Uganda. Well, one of the problems is that the leader of Uganda isn't a lot better than Kony. Thousands of people have died at his hand. He's a military dictator. He has stolen the election for 3 elections in a row. And he's really cut from the same cloth. He may not be quite as bad as Kony, but then Kony's dead now, or believed to be dead, and hasn't done anything for 6 years. So what's really going on there is what's happening is this supposed charitable outfit, who may have some really good intentions. I'm not saying that Russell, the guy, I think it's James Russell or whatever it is who made the video, doesn't have good intentions, really cares about these people. He may, but he may be also classified as what Stalin referred to as useful idiots, because they don't realize what's really going on behind the scenes. And this has been very profitable for him and the other videographers, and probably for the other workers. They figured, one person said that it was only about 31% of the money that goes to this charity actually goes to help the people. Now, they have done some good things. They created a radio network to help keep track of when these militant forces move through the country so that the villages would be forewarned when those militants are about ready to leap out of the jungle, because they know where they're located or where they were seen last, and so people can be on alert. But, and there's probably other things, good things that they have done. But really what's also going on in Uganda is it's a huge oil field, huge natural resources. There are no U.S. military bases in Africa, huge block of continent. We haven't got a military base. You thought we had them everywhere, but there's one, we don't have one. Well, maybe they'd like to have it in that nice tropical land of Uganda, beautiful green rolling farmland all over the country, lakes, wonderful place to set up another military base. So is this going viral to get the support of all the people? I mean, it's great. You know, we're going to get rid of Kony. The problem is Kony's gone, and there's a lot worse guys wandering around that are actually still doing damage to people. The reality is we would be a lot better off in this nation and any nation than if we just had virtuous leaders who said, you know, this is a virtuous leader in this country, we want to support this, so we want to trade with this country. If it's not a virtuous leader, if it's an oppressive leader, oppressing the stranger, that we don't want to trade with that, we let the people know, and the people know and make the decision not to. But we have raised a nation of selfish people. We have gotten selfish leaders that abuse their position. So anyway, what is the solution? The solution, again, is seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Seek to start forming a nation of people with as few as you can get, as many as you can get, that will actually start caring for one another and start being their own social welfare. And that's what the churches were supposed to be. That's what they were originally. They were that for almost 1,000 years until they were stamped out by another religion who crowned kings over men and did oppress the neighbors in their midst, the strangers in their midst, and forced the contributions. One of the books that we've got published, you can download all our books for free, because we aren't a commercial enterprise. We are actually the real church, is the Free Church Report. And on the picture, on the front cover of the Free Church Report, is Lady Godiva. I love to hold that book up with the cover facing me, in front of a room full of pastors, which I've done this, and say that the picture on the front of this book is Lady Godiva. And then I start to turn it around, and they all start covering their eyes, because everybody thinks that all Lady Godiva pictures is of a naked lady on a horse. The reality is, Lady Godiva never got naked on a horse. That story was made up over 100 years after she died. She was one of the most charitable women in Britain. Her husband had died, and she had married a Norman. And he ended up being one of the most charitable men in England. And the reason why they were known there, she's actually the patron saint of architects, because she did so many buildings at her own expense. What her husband was supposed to collect a tax from the people to support the church. And that hadn't existed. That was this new thing, this new church that was coming. This is back in the days of 1060, 1090. She's the only woman mentioned in the Doomsday Book. She was one of the only women who held property, because she held so much, because when her husband died, it was all hers. So what was the legend all about? He was supposed to collect the tax. She begged him not to collect the tax from the people. They couldn't afford it. And he says, well, we have to provide these funds because I'm under the king. And she said, I will provide them myself. So in other words, if you will provide them, she agreed to that they wouldn't going to collect the taxes from the people. So this is what Lady Godiva was really doing. So they don't want you to know about that. And he was so impressed with his wife's charity that he matched everything that she did as best he could. I don't think he had as much wealth. He was a very wealthy man himself, because he had estates back over in Normandy. But this is what they did, is the wealthy shared. And so that's why she's on the picture of the Free Church Report, because that's what the church should be doing. We should be collecting from those that have and giving to those that don't have, so that they don't need to go to the men who call themselves benefactors, but end up making them in bondage back in Egypt. Their Corban makes the word of God in effect. It takes away their freedom, like Paul says and David says, what should have been for your welfare has become a snare. You see, so you can't just throw off the government until you have an alternative system of social welfare that's based on the perfect law of liberty. And that's what the church is really supposed to be. Now, how do you keep a church honest? Well, you can't do it in these 500 men church, 1,000 men, 1,500 family churches. You have to form small, intimate congregations so that you know exactly who has a real need and exactly who will take care of it. But then if it's just a congregation, it's not going to be kingdom. And there could be needs that congregation can't meet. So you create congregations of congregations. And this is what was called the tens, hundreds, and thousands. It was used by governments or peoples, let's put it that way, all over the world for almost 1,000 years, until this church rose up that was the authoritarian church, started crowning kings, and those kings started killing everybody who didn't bow down to that church. And you started having inquisitions and everything else. Now, James Madison, who was the fourth president of the United States, and some say was the father of the Constitution, which I'm not a big advocate of the Constitution, but it is there. He said, we have staked the whole of all our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments, which includes the commandment, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. So the Constitution, as flawed as it was at the beginning, has nothing to do with the government you are now praying to on a regular basis for your benefits. You have gone whoring after other gods. You have made covenants with them that bind you into a system of servitude. worse than that of Egypt. In the servitude of Egypt, you only had to pay 20% of everything you earned. And that was it. But it got worse, the crafts of state. But that's where we have gone. And the fact is that if you really understood the message of Christ and really believed in what that message was, not the half-truths of Jesus that you hear about in most churches that have delivered you back into the bondage while they were putting up their big screen TVs, you would still be a free people today. And the fact is this is the time where you need to repent and turn around and start going back seeking that righteousness of God, because we have afflicted the widows and orphans of our society. We have killed the innocent in our society. All over the world we do this, but the United States, the worst, or one of the worst, because of our size and our capacity. We have fomented the Holocaust in our own nation, and now the Holocaust shall come upon us. There shall be weeping of and gnashing of teeth in the streets. And God has told us, and my wrath shall wax hot. Now, he's not going to actually do this, but he's going to allow it to happen because you have refused to listen to his ways. He says, he warned you back with Samuel, if you go electing the voice of the people, he says, electing a man who can exercise authority one over the other. We call it a king there in the translation, but all it is, you know, president, prime minister, doesn't matter, who can exercise authority one over the other, fight your battles for you. Then he would make his instruments of war, he would take your sons, he would take your daughters. All this has happened already. And when that day comes, when the sword comes, he will not hear you because you did not hear him. Because he told you how to operate your government by faith, hope, and charity, by free will offerings. How many times do you see the words free will offerings in the Old Testament? And actually, it would even be more if they translated it everywhere that way. But that's how they supported their government, through free will offerings. Can you find people who want to come together in congregations of record that record that, yeah, I'm a part of this free assembly. I'm not a member. I'm just freely assembling with these men and these women, and I'm going to watch, I'm going to help them homeschool. I'm going to help them provide for home health. There's so many things you could do to improve your health. You got anybody in your family with Alzheimer's? You need to get a lot of good, pure coconut oil. Start feeding. They are reversing the dementia of Alzheimer's. Reversing it. Simply by changing their diet. Simply by changing their diet. And you can do the same thing with diabetes. You can do the same thing with lots of things. We can get into all that, but this isn't a health show. Although I know we can talk about those things, but nobody called in, so we're not going to get into that. If you want to call in next week, better write the questions down on the number and catch me then, and we'll tell you more about that. Or join the Living Network at His Holy Church and start gathering together with other people that are discovering alternatives, an alternative society that knows how to survive the decline and fall of the modern Roman Empire, which is coming. I hate to be breaking that to you. I don't want you doing this out of fear. I want you doing it out of love for one another. But I'll do it. I got to tell you the truth, and I guess that's what came out of my mouth this time. I never know. I have a basic theme of what I'm going to talk about.
Well, I appreciate your spontaneity, Brother Gregory. I truly do. And I like I said before, I think we get the best of you here at the end of the day. You've just basically just been primed all day long for this talk, so I really appreciate it. I'm a big, big fan of coconut oil.
Good.
I've done research on it.
You
want to
get the non-hydrogenated stuff, which, you know, I'm sure you're aware of.
Absolutely.
Right.
I get the best that I can find, and that's that's the organic extra virgin cold pressed coconut oil. That stuff
right.
is just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you would be better off with, you know, certain animal fats in your diet rather than the homogenized hydrogenated oils that they're feeding us on a regular basis. But in the case of Alzheimer's, it really seems to be the coconut oil that makes a bigger difference than anything else as far as I have discovered. But that's why we're networking, is that we're finding out more and more by networking. You know, gallstones, kidney stones, all sorts of maladies. And we have seen not only better healing, we've seen miraculous healings, instantaneous healings, bones healed back, burns healed back, in not weeks, not days, but hours. That is all real when you start returning to the ways of God. But I'll just have to entice people with that because we're out of time.
It always seems to happen too quickly, doesn't it? Goes by fast. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. We really appreciate you being here. Brother Gregory, once again, you're just awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, we'll see you next week then.
All right. God bless.
God bless. Everyone, I hope that you will tune in next week for Brother Gregory's show. My computer is unstalling. My computer is giving a little hiccup here, which it's been doing a little bit lately. So here's information on how to contact Brother Gregory and hook up with the Living Network.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.
Just pick up on a little thing that Brother Gregory brought up about coconut oil. And we're just going to share a little bit about that because I have tons of articles and stuff on coconut oil and the benefits of that as far as brain food. I'm going to use an article here that I had bookmarked from Natural News. My world is full of coconuts, including coconut oil and coconut milk. That's not unusual because I live on Maui. But I'm happily seeing coconut oil all over the internet as the treatment for dozens of conditions and possibly hundreds of symptoms. My first clue as to the wonders of coconut oil came through my AIDS research in New York in the very early 1990s. Reports started popping up through the AIDS community about miraculous cures using coconut oil. To my mind, that's what opened the whole world of coconut oil, the coconut oil industry. Before then, coconut oil was considered dangerous and a saturated fat by the margarine promoters who set out to demonize butter. We know that ended in tears when it finally came out that the trans fats in margarine proved to be much more dangerous than any saturated fat. Dr. Bruce Fife, stop Alzheimer's now. That's what he just finished reading. And it talks about the incredible benefit of coconut. Each year, the research catches up to what he's known all along about the power of coconut oil and its complete non-toxic nature. He presents a breakthrough in the treatment of Alzheimer's and other neurological diseases. do a little bit of rhetoric here. Coconut is highly nutritious and rich in fiber, vitamins, and minerals. It's classified as a functional food because it provides many health benefits beyond its nutritional content. Coconut oil is of special interest because it possesses healing properties far beyond that of any other dietary oil and is extensively used in traditional medicine among Asian and Pacific populations. Pacific Islanders consider coconut oil to be a cure for all illnesses. Coconut palm is so highly valued by them as both a source of food and medicine. It's called the tree of life. That's pretty interesting.